It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist TJ McCormick.
Now to the Bernard McGurk Studios. Here's TJ McCormick.
Walter M. Sterling. Here, let me help you with this. You ready? Walter M. Sterling. Here we go.
Revealed. Walter Sterling from the Red Apple Audio Network.
Now let's try it again.
The hidden layer of our existence revealed. Walter Sterling from the Red Apple Audio Network.
Red Apple Audio. UFOs.
Cults. Aliens. Societies.
Sterling secrets.
The hidden layer of our existence revealed. Walter Sterling from the Red Apple Audio Network.
All right, 6 minutes past the hour. Now listen to me. You and I are about to hear from the bravest man I have ever interviewed on the radio. It's a live broadcast. This is the bravest man I have ever had the privilege of speaking to. This is a man who was connected with the U.S. government, and he experienced a startling encounter with an unidentified aerial phenomena while at his job. Now, according to his account, the sighting occurred during a routine assignment and involved advanced aerial technology that did not resemble any conventional aircraft that he was aware of. Now, he recognized the significance of what he had witnessed. Mike, his name is Mike, reported the incident through official channels, and you know how that goes. His report quickly gained attention, leading to conversations with senior government personnel who were interested in documenting the details of the encounter. They wanted to know about this. But as things progressed, Mike says he was invited to provide testimony in highly secure environments, including two separate meetings inside a sensitive compartmental information facility known as a SCIF. Now, these briefings allowed him to recount his experience directly to government officials responsible for handling classified or sensitive aerospace information. He is an official whistleblower. And for the purposes of our broadcast on the Red Apple Audio Network with Walter Sterling, he's going to just use the name Mike. But I assure you, he was a government official. He witnessed something that he was probably not supposed to see and probably didn't understand. But it was nothing like anything he had ever seen. And Mike, reveal to us, after you saw this, tell us what happened next. The floor is yours. The story is unbelievable. And to me, Michael, you are a brave man.
I do appreciate that, Walter. So to kind of bring everybody in on this, I usually go by Whistling Mike. Whistling has to do, of course, with the whistleblower.
Now, are you going to whistle? Because I don't want you whistling.
No, sir.
All right, good, because it's too late in the day. We can't have random whistling, but I sure want this story, Mike.
Sure thing. So, you know, I did a little over 2+ years in the SSCI Aero SCIF. I know there's a lot of acronyms there. So SSCI, of course, is the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. So that is all the intelligence agency's boss. And the SCIF is where you get locked into basically what's almost a bank vault where no sound can come in or out, where secrets are revealed. So I'm in the same exact table where the FBI, CIA, and everybody else comes in and briefs the Senate on all the things that we usually probably never get to hear about. Also was in the Aero SCIF. Aero, some people may know, it's a long acronym, but essentially they're the ones that are running down the drones, the UAPs, the UFOs. Was in that SCIF, was in the SSCI SCIF several times after that requested. What we were talking about is TSSCI, TS, of course, being top secret, SCI being sensitive, compartmented, meaning you have to have a need to know, UAPs and drones. And where that got me was an OSI, which is the Office of Special Investigation. That's kind of like the FBI within our own government, but we called them OSI. Verified death threats from other countries, as well as adversaries offering financial offers for technology that I developed and found. So,
now wait one second, Mike. I'm going to let you continue. I don't want to interrupt you, but did you just tell me that you had death threats from other countries?
Yes, sir. And again, I'm the type of person where, you know, talk's kind of cheap. So there's receipts for this. I've already released receipts for the, you know, several of the media. And again, that's OSI confirmed. So that's as good as it gets. That's the people that investigate the military and government from within the military and government.
Go ahead. Keep telling us this story. I want to hear this. I just wanted to identify that there were death threats.
Yes, sir. So the reason for this is essentially what I found, right? We talked about TS and SCI, UAPs, and drones. So there's other things in the sky other than just what we think of with aliens and UFOs, and a lot of times that's adversary equipment or sometimes our own stuff that hasn't been reported right, which then makes it illegal, hasn't came through the right financing network of Capitol Hill. So some folks were quite upset with me. Keep in mind, you know, I'm about as proud of as American as you could get, but, you know, who's the bad guy here, right? Capitol Hill or the Pentagon, I mean, it's a weird sort of a jurisdiction fight you're put into the middle of. So with that said, here recently, the former director of Arrow, which is the group at the Pentagon that handles these things, came out on podcast. It's still available right now to watch, and accused me of extorting the United States government. You can go watch it right now. Needless to say, that's false, although my group and my equipment and what we deal with the government is able to identify things even within stealth mode in the skies. So where does that leave me? Well, it leaves me with my first name being released, Mike, and the Pentagon essentially saying I was extorting the U.S. government, which doesn't work real well for my company. You know, that's kind of a bad thing to have over your head. But the second part of that is they're going on and on about even my mental state. This is their retaliation. So, again, what happens when you have a family and kids as friends as parents, you know. So they try to ruin me, simply put. So I'm fighting back right now over that. That's why I'm talking today. That's why I've been talking here for a couple days. But I'm still fighting the Invention Secrecy Act on what I've developed. The Invention Secrecy Act being this little secret we've had around since the World Wars, where if the United States government wants something you've developed, they can essentially take it. You don't have a choice. It then goes away. You can't speak about it, even to your spouse. You do not get paid for it, even though they're supposed to. So I'm stuck with the only customer being the United States government that's accusing me of extortion because of what I have and what I can do. And I'm just trying to get a fair deal fighting through this mess. That's really what's going on, Walt.
All right, now this is Whistleblower Mike. Now, before we talk about vaguely about what you've invented or what your device is, I want to know, to the degree you can tell me, what the hell is it that you saw in the sky that made you think not human, alien, unfamiliar, UAP? What did you see, Mike?
Well, to the point that I can talk about, let's use one that's out there. I think everybody knows of or can easily find the USS Nimitz Tic Tac encounter, right? During that...
Wait. Yes, everybody can find it. However, I'd like you to stop a second and describe it. I know what you're talking about, but I know that it's sometimes difficult with different labels to understand quickly what you're talking about. Tell us from scratch the incident you're talking about and when that happened.
Yes, sir. So back at the beginning of the early 2000s, I believe it was 2004, unlike a lot of these other cases, now again, I'm a nuts and bolts guy, so I've got to have proof and material to believe things. Our fighter pilots and the carrier strike group went out for training off the coast of California. And there's a multitude here that I'll shorten, but they were picking up tracks on their radar, and they couldn't figure out what it was. It was coming down from, say, 80,000 feet sea level and back up. There shouldn't be anything in that area that's a training range. You can only be U.S. military in there, and again, no craft does this. So they sent out a couple of Top Gun pilots, David Fravor being the most famous. He's been all over the big podcast networks. And what they would discover with their own eyes, multitudes of people, including two people in two different jets, that's four, as well as what was called a Hawkeye, a surveillance plane with several people in it, was what they described as a Tylenol or propane shank tank that they just decided to call the Tic Tac that was white. And the important thing here about this Tic Tac is it's hovering above the water with no means of propulsion, and then it simply, after flying around a little bit, just disappears in front of your eyes, and it shows back up on the radar at what's called a cap point, which is a point that only they knew for a meeting point to set off. And this is, again, the best of the best. There are radar tracks. There is somewhat of a video of it. Those performance characteristics, although not exactly the Tic Tac that I've seen, is what the craft that I seen was able to exhibit when this all started.
How long ago was that?
First time before we got tracking these was about around the same time, early in the 2000s. The reason I never give the exact location, GPS, date, and timestamp is when you get into adversary countries and you get into spies, what happens is one case, for instance, the Tic Tac that we know about, doesn't mean a whole lot. But if you get a second case or a third case, then you just look at things like, for instance, what satellites or data links are in the sky. And then you essentially figure out a lot about how this thing's flying, what it needs, where it's going. And that's not what we want.
Now, whistleblower Mike, roughly, what was your role at this time? What was your role at the time of the Tic Tac event? And then what was your role when you ran into trouble?
So my role with the government was not an official role at this time when we first witnessed this. What we started was essentially a company building on what we learned and what we had that could, and we'll get into that a little bit about what we've developed. And we essentially tried to direct sell the United States military with it. Now, they were interested in what we provided because nobody should know that. But rather than purchase it, they had us investigated by AFOSI, NCIS.
Why would they do that? There are thousands of vendors to the U.S. government. What was the trigger that caused them to investigate you rather than just say, here's a check?
Well, oddly enough, that's the same thing we're dealing with now. It's one thing to show up with technology and they give you a check. Now, in the defense industry, if you Google the term Valley of Death, that's really where small guys deal with. Everybody's not a Lockheed or Northrop. So the Invention Secrecy Act that's still used, and it's used in abundance, is what they usually decide to throw at you. So the investigation was to come down hard on us, try and pin us down. I mean, it was a very threatening sort of thing, which is eventually how we ended up at the Senate Select Committee of Intelligence, which was to complain about all these agencies as well as the military that was investigating it. Believe it or not, our funding guy who works for the United States government, who's still trying to get us funded and a deal worked out, said that is completely normal for people in this situation who've been something of this nature. It's just how they react, unfortunately.
Now, what was the connection between what you invented and the Tic Tac event?
Well, what we have discovered gives you a chance to go back and look at the Tic Tac event with different eyes.
Ah. And what would the benefit of the different eyes be approximately, Mike?
Well, Commander David Fravor, who's the big witness in that, made a statement that he didn't believe it was human. Now, Commander Fravor...
Hold on. I'm going to interrupt you to get really clear. What was inhuman, what you invented or what you saw?
What he saw during the Tic Tac encounter, which would have been that craft called the Tic Tac, and the performance characteristics that it had.
No way that it could have been a test craft, a craft invented by another country. It had to be not human.
That's his words. And he said, based on what he's doing now for a living somewhere in the government, that he would know.
All right. You and I are talking to Whistleblower Mike. And Whistleblower Mike, you have seen the videos of the Tic Tac event where there were U.S. Air Force pilots who saw a craft off the coast of California that was moving in ways that made no sense for a human-created craft or pilot. It was completely different, had to be alien, according to very serious people in the Air Force. And what Mike has discovered, who's on the phone, Mike has discovered a way to interpret what they saw that was unique, powerful, and important, and that has gotten him in a hell of a lot of trouble. And if you'd like to talk to Mike, the number is 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Good evening. It's 21 past the hour. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Another Side of Midnight.
It's Another Side of Midnight.
Rural Americans deserve access to the best our nation has to offer, especially when it comes to healthcare. Across every state and every community, America's rural hospitals are the first line of defense, protecting our families, neighbors, and loved ones. No matter where you live, hospital care doesn't clock out. They're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Each year, America's over 5,000 hospitals care for millions of patients, providing 24/7 emergency care, delivering babies, cancer treatments, and other life-saving care that patients rely on. Behind every one of those patients are doctors, nurses, and caregivers working tirelessly to keep people healthy and safe. Hospitals are our community's lifelines. They employ our neighbors and keep our families' health. But now, some in Congress are threatening access to care. Tell Congress, protect patient care to keep America strong. Don't cut rural health care.
It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormick.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's T.J. McCormick.
Another Side of Midnight, Walter Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network.
All right, it's 23 past the hour. Good evening, I'm Walter M. Sterling, and you and I are talking to Whistleblower Mike. Whistleblower Mike worked for the United States government. He saw something he wasn't supposed to see. He was sure, and others agree, that it was not of human origin, it was not human-built, it was not human-piloted, and it had to do with the relationship that you and I have with the UAPs off the coast of California 20, 25 years ago. Those things that look like TikToks and the grainy black-and-white video. Well, he has a lot of information about that. And I'm listening to him, and I'm thinking, Mike, why aren't they happy that you have a lot of information about this? Why aren't we sharing the information? What is the conspiracy, Mike, that is preventing all of us from understanding what that TikTok was, what other UAPs are, and why are you in trouble, Mike?
Yes, sir. Well, you know, they say the United States government's 20, 30 years, sometimes 50 or 100 years ahead of us in technology that we don't get to know about. And what it comes down to is they really don't want you to know about what that technology is. Now, I do want to clear up that I was sent out on assignment by SSCI, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, to get answers, but it was not an official deal. They were waving the deal in front of me like a carrot on a stick. So we were not paid for that. Instead, you got what we got now, which is they were quite upset with the truth in the answers that we found. We are the only people in the history of the SSCI SCIF. Keep in mind, this is the most powerful intelligence agency or committee in the world. All the intelligence agencies report to them. We are the only people to ever be in there that did not have a clearance or were not some sort of military contractor, because we had the answers in the goods. They had to come to us. You think that'd be great? I agree, Walter, but there's another way to deal with people like us, and that is to come down hard to get what they want.
All right, you and I are talking to Mike. Here's your phone number to call, and we can talk to him. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. I'd appreciate it if you would go through the list of threats you have received since you invented this device. It enables you to see the truth about unidentified aerial phenomena, or whatever that stands for. I've never known what it was stood for. And I really want to get a handle on why you're in trouble. So please give me a list of the threats you've received, Mike.
Yes, sir. So there's different categories of threats. So the first category of threats is you get financial offers from adversary countries who are real good about figuring out who's talking to who and who has what. And they figured us out and they want to buy it. Well, naturally, I would never say yes to that because that would make our military planes and apparatus obsolete. So then they come with the threats, and the threats include death threats. Now, I'll be very careful what I say here on countries, but I will say that all that was turned over to what was the Department of Defense, now Department of War, and OSI, as they came in, wanting me to either shut up about what we picked up that they had in the sky, or wanting me to sell them what we had, and it just wasn't going to happen. So that's the adversary category. When you get into our own United States government, besides obviously plainly telling us they wanted to shut us up, then you get into things like the former acting director, who at the time was still on the payroll with GARO, which is the government Pentagon office that investigates this, going on podcast, it's very easy to find on YouTube or anywhere else, and saying out of the blue, which the question had nothing to do with me bringing me up, I was living in the shadows then, and saying this gentleman essentially had physical material confirming that, and pieces of material and information, and that he was extorting the United States government for a deal.
When you say he, you mean you.
Yes, sir. And now okay. There's another part to this, too, you must remember.
Right.
You have adversaries looking for you and threatening you with death already, and then to go out and confirm to them, because you know they listen to all these shows too, that I have physical material on my possession. I was immediately contacted by a couple people that are still on my side in the government, and they said, you have literally been marked for death. Do you have any idea what an adversary country would do to get their hands on this technology? And a guy who is the acting director still on the payroll just announced to the world spies, you have physical material from it. You don't want to be me at that point in time. Not good. So that's what our own government brought. During that same interview, he would go further and say that based on what he was told by the senator's staff on the committee, that he wouldn't trust me around his family. Never said what that meant.
I don't understand why you having UAP material would cause you to be not trustworthy around somebody's family.
Well, there you go. Everybody was shocked about it, and he's basically saying he was told something, but not what, and not by who, but by the senator. So here's kind of where this gets interesting. Because they identified me as a whistleblower, they would later pull that whistleblower protection. And we have it in writing, we have it in receipt, multiple lawyers. They would just recently, a couple days ago, admit that I was a whistleblower. However, they said it would be a whistleblower without legal protection. Now, why would you tell somebody they were a whistleblower if it wasn't with legal protection? So right now, I do not have whistleblower protection, but I have Privacy Act protection. So they can't identify me to attach me to those horrible things they said. But as retaliations go, I am fair game. And when you challenge the government, they come down hard on you.
All right, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Enya, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Hi. Hello, Enya. Hello.
Hello, is that me? Ina, E-N-A.
Okay, E-N-A.
Yes. There are,
it couldn't be anything else but you, Enya. Hi.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoy your program. I want to talk about alien because I saw alien when I was going to the Middle East. After I leave Paris, we stop in Paris, and after I leave Paris and take the plane flew about 2 hours. Then it was going into darkness and stuff. And I was sitting, I was in the, like, in the first class. So I'm behind the cabin of the pilots on the right side. And as we were going in, the plane was flowing, I saw the flying saucer, the aliens, two aliens, plane, right by my window. Because and when I look back in the passenger, most of the people was asleep and the blind
but
was
Anna,
down. But
Anna, yeah. When you were Anna, when you saw these aliens outside the window of your airplane, were you scared?
Yeah.
Were you scared?
No, because I know they exist, and
yes,
I wasn't scared.
That's good.
And that's not the first time I come in contact.
Oh,
I see
I'm sure that's true, Anna. I'm sure that's true. Thank you very much for the call. 800-848-9222. Now, Mike, whistleblower Mike, I'm hearing a lot of pronouns, and I'm hearing a lot of vagueness. I'm looking for something specific. The material that you have, is it a machine? Is it alien DNA? Is it alien tissues? And the device that you have, does it clarify, are we looking at aliens or where it comes from? I need to hear a little more here, Mike.
So we fit into categories, right? This is how the defense industry, of course, works.
Stop. Mike, you've given us the categories before. What I need to know is closer to what it is you saw and closer to what is it that your device can do.
Right, Walter. So there's four different types of devices, not one, sir. And as far as what I saw, it's unfortunately it's about as far as I can go. Naturally, a skiff means what goes on in a skiff, and
right.
What's said in a skiff is classified, and I can't get myself in trouble, unfortunately, till
oh, you're
tonight.
In trouble already, Mike. You're in trouble.
I am, but it's best to keep the flames in the kitchen, sir.
All right, sir. And you think you're going to be successful in selling your device, or do you think that they're just going to keep saying that you're an extortionist?
Well, I had a conversation with a gentleman that would know, and what he said is, believe it or not, if you can be a big enough pain in their butt, what they're doing is normal, and supposedly this is all going to get worked out, and when it does, all these people that have said these things, I'll bump back into them, and it'll all be water under the bridge. That's
yeah,
how the defense industry ugly and works.
Yeah, listen, I really appreciate your courage, and I appreciate the time that you've spent on the phone with me. And this is Whistleblower Mike, and thank you very much for being on Another Side of Midnight with Walter M. Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Network. Good evening. I've got a phone number. It's 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. I always feel in those conversations that I'm talking to Nikola Tesla. I always can imagine what it was like to be Nikola Tesla, who had invented everything from death rays to wireless energy to free energy, and everything he stepped into, everything he got near was a threat. And that's the power that a great invention or a great inventor has, that they can invent something like, oh, gee, the car will run on water, or the car will run just on air, or that we can distribute electricity without a wire. These are powerful people, and therefore a threat. Good evening at 800-848-9222. Benny, welcome to Another Side of Midnight. Hi.
Good evening. I worked in New York City for many years. The tunnels under New York City are the walkway tunnels that nobody really knows about. Not that nobody knows about, the workers know about it. You could walk from 23rd to 60th through a complete tunnel and not see a soul. Now, there were these other branches that, you know, go to this building, go to that building. You would walk past rooms that were the size of, like, three car garages that were completely empty.
Right.
It was amazing on the, down there. And literally, you could walk through these tunnels with a four-foot ladder and a tool bag, and nobody would ask a question about anything, what you're doing, until you went into a building. Now, lately, of course, when you go into a building, you have to go through this door, and it would set off, you know, whatever. That set off an alarm, but, you know, they would know that, oh, that tunnel was accessed or whatever. It doesn't happen anymore. But these tunnels are still down there, and they're still very used for immediate access. So if you want to go cross town, my God, amazing how fast you can go.
I found those tunnels myself when it was really, really cold outside many years ago. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, maybe if I just go down this. And I started at Rockefeller Center, and I went on and on and on. And just like you say, Benny, and thank you for the call, all of the buildings that I could walk under, I could have never walked into those lobbies without 10 pieces of ID. Michael in Manhattan, welcome to with Walter Sterling to 800-848-9222, Another Side of Midnight. Hello, Michael.
Hey, good morning, Walter. I was listening to part of what this alleged whistleblower was talking about, and I had two feelings. One, I was taking my hand and putting Jell-O in my hand, and I was trying to hold the Jell-O, and I couldn't get my hand around the Jell-O. The other part of it is that I have a garden upstate New York, and I was thinking perhaps if I had the way of doing it, that I could take his conversation and convert it into something that would help the garden grow better, like manure. If I could do that, I would make a lot of money.
Michael, thank you very much for the call. Jimmy at 800-848-9222. Hi, Jimmy. Welcome to Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling. Hi.
Good morning, Walter M. Sterling. Jimmy Pro from Greenwich, Connecticut. It's great to be on your show. I love
now,
it.
Now, which part, well, before you go any further, Jimmy, which part of Greenwich are you in? Are you in near that fancy, overpriced supermarket? Which part are you near?
Great question. I'm in Greenwich proper, 06830, south of the parkway off of, well, I'm on Pexland Road in Greenwich, which is...
Now, my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law, who I do not like, they live on that main road that goes through Greenwich. What's the name of that road?
Putnam Avenue, east and west Putnam Avenue.
No, different.
Uh-huh.
No, anyway, but let me finish, because this is sort of interesting. It is assumed in Greenwich and through the environs that you will have a swimming pool. It's assumed you're going to have a swimming pool. But the differentiator in terms of money is they also have a pond. They have a pond and a swimming pool. And then the next level is they are arranging, and it's taking 18 months. They're arranging to have the pond dredged. And then I asked my sister-in-law the magic question. I said, the dredging of the pond, do you have to get permits from the town of Greenwich to dredge? Oh, you wouldn't believe the permits they have to get. That's a whole level of wealth I can't even imagine, Jimmy. Now, what did you want to say?
I believe it.
What did you want to say?
It's a rigorous process.
Yes.
In Greenwich to get any kind of building permits or any permits for adjustments to your property.
Yes.
Fortunately, I know I don't have a pond. I do have a pool.
Of course you do.
But it's very nice. So, but thank you. Very interesting. Thank you for sharing that with us this morning.
And I'll share it again and again and again. As long as Mr. Katsimatidis and Chad Lopez keep me, I will be telling that story as it progresses, because I know you're going to want to know about the dredging of the pond.
Absolutely. Now, I want to say just a couple of quick things here, if I may.
Sure.
I think Mr. Katsimatidis is a just what he's done. I mean, he has turned this radio station into like just a great, you know, vehicle for information. It really is a learning experience every time I turn on the station.
Oh, believe me, every time I go on, I learn. Believe me, Jimmy, I'm learning every second.
Absolutely. And the second thing is, you know, I went from AM terrestrial radio. I actually worked in broadcasting for a few years, about two decades, actually. And then I went over to FM, obviously, you know, as a loyal listener to the frequent FM band. And then I went to Sirius. But I got tired of listening to, you know, Linda Ronstadt. Like,
where's this going, Jimmy? Where's this going? Where's this going,
so
Jimmy?
I do listen to WABC.
Yes.
Probably 95%. Of the time now. Yeah. I'm on it. I cannot believe in 2026 WABC has done such a great job that I'm actually listening. I'm compelled to listen like 95% of the time.
Sounds like a promo, Jimmy.
You know, my favorite episode, the closest I've ever become to aliens on that note is the watching the Twilight Zone's William Shatner episode.
Yeah, that was the best one, when he was looking out the window, which is where I thought she was going to go. Listen, Jimmy, I appreciate this call. I don't want you to go anywhere just yet. I just want you to get to the point.
There was no point. I just wanted to share that.
All right, then listen to me, because it gives me an opportunity to magnify something you've said, which is this. I have been in radio too long, and I am fussy about who manages a station. I'm fussy about what they do. What John Catsimatidis has done and Chad Lopez has done doesn't happen. You don't take an AM station that was flat on its ass, that was dead in the water, that had been mismanaged as miserably as anything I have ever experienced. I couldn't believe what they had done to the station. Managed to drag it down to, like, I think 93rd, 94th in New York City, and have brought it up, an AM station, to being the number one AM station. Yes, that's right. Number one AM station in New York. No FM. Number one AM station in New York. And a top 10 station. A top freaking station. And, you know, part of the reason, maybe all of the reason, is right before I came on today, Jimmy, there was a live show. Dr. Sky, live show. And right after I go off, there will be a live one-hour newscast the minute I go up with a live host on a Saturday, Sunday. That doesn't happen. And, oh, my gosh, he took out an ad in the New York Post today. Very flattered. Jimmy, thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for calling. Walter M. Sterling at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. This is the Red Apple Audio Network.
It's Another Side of Midnight.
Ready, set, go get your Toyota today. With great deals on your favorite trucks at your local Toyota dealer. Like a full-size Tundra. Or check out the off-road ready Tacoma. Visit Toyota.com to find out more. Toyota, let's go places.
It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormick.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's T.J. McCormick.
Another Side of Midnight, Walter Sterling, Red Apple Audio Network. Walter Sterling makes your evening strange. Red Apple Audio Network.
The hidden layer of our existence revealed. Walter Sterling from the Red Apple Audio Network.
48 minutes past the hour, 48 minutes past the hour. And like you, for about a year, I thought about the Roman Empire. Every man in America thought about the Roman Empire for about a year. Couldn't go through a day without 2-3 minutes thinking about the Roman Empire. Why we all experienced this, I don't know. Maybe it was mind control. And then 7.5 months ago, what did we all start thinking about for at least 5 minutes a day? We thought about Sydney Sweeney. We thought about Sydney Sweeney and our relationship with her, how it could be improved, how we could see more of Sidney Sweeney. That's what we did. And it's about 5 minutes a day that every man does that. Now, we spend a good 3 or 4 minutes a day thinking about the enterprise known as Jeffrey Epstein. And the reason we think about it, and the reason that we keep going back to things like that, is psychological dissonance. When it doesn't make sense, there's a reason for that. It doesn't. The reason we think about Jeffrey Epstein is because it doesn't make sense. I will summarize it in 40 seconds, and then I will share with you my theory. Love to hear yours. Mine is right, yours not right, but here's my theory. Jeffrey Epstein was a not college graduate teaching at a fancy private school in Manhattan. Dalton, not just any fancy private school, not like the ones my kids could get into, the Montessori schools, who needs that? Or the British school. Like if you work at BBC America, your kids go to the British school where they speak British. Who knew that my daughter would be the subject of bullying because she didn't have a British accent? This little girl goes into fourth grade at the British International School for one lousy year. Not a good experience, but part of it was that half the kids were very British, and they made fun of her at the British International School for not speaking British, which I thought was English, but I was wrong. Who knew? That was our experience with private schools. Or as my oldest daughter says, Dad, we are not private school kids. And we are not private school kids. That was her experience. But Jeffrey Epstein, teaching at Dalton without a college degree, I would figure that the charter of the school or the promise to the parents was that if nothing else, they'd have a degree from City College, Syracuse, Community College. At least they'd have a degree. He didn't have a degree. All right, that's the first problem. The second problem is that, as you know, if you've ever been to New York or if you live in New York, you know that the way you identify wealth in New York City, and I suppose most major cities, is where do you live? And he didn't have to provide any credentials, proof of finance, nothing. All he had to do was say, I live on that street in that house, the largest private home in Manhattan. That's all he had to say. Everybody assumed he was a gazillionaire. Everybody wanted to be him. The lust for real estate in Manhattan is profound. And if he's sitting there saying, well, this is where I live, and you go, oh, my gosh, he has the biggest house in Manhattan. That's all you need to know. Whatever he wants is fine. He's not only one of us. He's better than any of us. That's what they'd look at. Well, where did that start? So there's that Wexler guy, right? What's the name of that guy? The founder of the Limited, Banana Republic, The Gap, Victoria's Secret. What's the deal with Victoria's Secret? Right. He ran all those huge retail operations. But what always is missing in the story about the CEO of the Limited was what business was he really in? He was in the clothing industry. He was in the garment industry. And what does that involve? Trucks. It involves trucks. And who drives trucks? Union truck drivers through New Jersey, through Connecticut, through Manhattan. Who are driving those trucks? Union truck drivers. Whose union is it? Right. He had to make deals with all of those unions, all of our friends. You know about Tony, right? Yeah, all of our friends. And he had that money. And he had to do something with the money. And he happened to have close ties with a lot of organizations. I believe that Jeffrey Epstein was a construct. That he was, every time I see that they say he was a financier, he was no financier. He was a guy who got half a billion dollars to finance things with. He wasn't a financier. He was told what to do. He was told what to spend the money on. And in my opinion, he's not dead. Because too many leads lead to Mossad. Too many connections to Israel. But what is completely ignored by the media, and by the way, when you call at 800-848-9222, you become the media. Congratulations. If you look at the Epstein files, you go through the Epstein files, what name is in the Epstein files the most? Clinton? No. Hillary Clinton? No. Bill Gates? No. The name in the Epstein files the most is Rothschild. Rothschild, allegedly the wealthiest family and the most powerful family on earth. Since the mid-1800s, the most powerful family on earth. And Epstein, in the Epstein files, is quoted more than once saying, well, you know, I represent the Rothschilds. Now, this could have just been a jerk making stuff up to be entertaining at dinner parties. But he kept saying, I represent the Rothschilds. And all of it leads from that. I also don't believe he's dead. And the reason I don't believe he's dead is not because I see wacky pictures of him on the streets of Israel. The reason I don't believe he's dead is the photos we saw of him dead. When have you ever seen a body being taken out in a body bag where you can see the face? A police escort, a coroner, taking a body out of a building, and you can see their face. You can never see their face. Courtesy to the dead, they cover their face. There was a determination. There was a decision to show that face. Everybody needs to see that he's dead. Why would everybody need to see that he's dead? He was a prisoner. He killed himself. That's the story. And now what comes out? Now comes out the next story that the prison guard, when they're going through all of her calls and her texts, an hour before he died, she Googled him. Now, why the hell would she have to Google him? She knows him well. She's guarding him in jail. Why would she have to look up who Jeffrey Epstein is if she's guarding him in jail? She knew full well who he was. And then she apparently texted him or called him or something 40 minutes before he was found dead. Why? Maybe to see if he was already dead. Maybe to see if he was answering. I don't know. But I do know that the reason that you and I think about Jeffrey Epstein at least 3 or 4 minutes a day, taking over the space that used to go to Sidney Sweeney, is that it doesn't make sense. It doesn't settle in our minds because something is missing. There's a piece of this story missing, several pieces missing. And just like with the UFO files, Donald Trump, and we're going to talk about this with Dave Scott in 7 minutes, the UFO files, Trump says, I'm going to release all of the files. Yes, I'm going to release all of the files. Coming soon to a theater near you. And then what do we learn from Dave Scott, who you and I are going to talk to in a few minutes, an expert on UFOs and an abductee, He says, right after Donald Trump announced that, 3 million files disappeared. What do you mean 3 million? 3 million UFO files disappeared. What is the conspiracy controlling those files? That's what you and I are going to find out. I have a phone number. Oh, did you push the clock ahead? There are certain things that happen that morning zoos and wacky morning men must talk about. And one of them, I'm telling you, tomorrow morning, all you're going to hear on Monday morning and radio stations across the world is about the time change. Boy, that really confused me. That was certainly a shocker. My wife, sister, boyfriend didn't remember to do it. And, oh, my gosh, everybody was late. Ah! Yes, it's like April Fool's, St. Patrick's Day, Groundhog Day, official morning show holidays. Anyway, my number is 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222, and I actually answer my email. It's walter.sterling@wabcradio.com, walter.sterling@wabcradio.com. We're going to ask Dave Scott about being abducted, what happened, in his opinion, to the 3 million files associated with the UFOs that vanished seconds after Donald Trump said, I'm going to release all the files. This is the Red Apple Audio Network.
Jackson Hewitt handles your taxes and your stress. Inhale our no surprise price of $149 or less. Exhale, paying more for complicated taxes. You won't. Inhale new tax law knowledge. Exhale, missing out on your biggest refund? Certainly not. Don't miss paying $149 or less. Rest easy. Jackson Hewitt's got your taxes. Guaranteed. Limited time offer for new clients on federal terms. Participating locations only. Terms at jacksonhewitt.com/149.
It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormick.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's T.J. McCormick.
Walter M. Sterling, it is 4:05 in the Eastern Time Zone.
The hidden layer of our existence revealed. Walter Sterling from the Red Apple Audio Network.
Dave Scott is an abductee. Dave Scott is an expert on conspiracies that have kept the truth from you and me about UFOs, extraterrestrials, and the shocking fact that the President of the United States, the great Donald Trump, announced, what, 3 weeks ago, Dave Scott, that he was going to release all the information about the UFOs. He was going to finally release all of the information about the UFOs. And then how many million files did you tell me disappeared, Dave Scott? How many million files have disappeared?
Well, there's some subject to that after I've investigated that a little bit more. Apparently, there was about 3.8 million files that seemed to go missing on that topic. And now they're in my sources of telling me that this number may be lower than that. So right now, I mean, there's just a ball of confusion going on with the UFO files. And let's blame Iran for that and the conflict going on there. I don't think we're going to get much out of Donald Trump about the UFO files or any politician right now about the UFO files and when they will be released. I mean, there is still some hope for many people in Washington, D.C., that Donald Trump will actually give an executive order on this. This is something he has not done as of yet. So he has stated, yes, I want the files released, but he hasn't put an executive order in, which isn't really going to force anything to happen.
800-848-9222, 800-848-9222 is the live line to talk to Dave Scott about the conspiracy theories surrounding the UFO files. The first thought I had was 3.8 million, 3.5 million files disappeared. I'm not going to be stupid enough to ask, how would anybody know? But where would they come up with the number? Where would they come up with the number? Are they just making that up?
Well, I mean, these numbers, you know, being in journalism as long as you have it in broadcasting, that a lot of times what happens here is these stories get leaked. Now, when the story gets leaked, there's always a little bit of consciousness that kind of goes along with it. Because you want to make sure those numbers are real. And that is something right now that just seems to be a little bit up in the air. And look, if they are going to release files, we have no idea when, we have no idea how many. The big focus right now around everything seems to be around the Roswell incident back in 1947, where allegedly a UFO crashed and there were alien bodies and everything there that was, allegedly picked up, originally taken out to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, and then eventually moved over to Area 51 in Nevada. Now, whether or not, we're going to get that seems to be the golden ticket. You know, we're always looking for something like what is going to be the highlight of it all. And I really think that the highlight has to be Roswell. It really does. I mean, yes, there have been alleged other crash retrieval programs that have happened in the United States, whether it's Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, or Kingman, Arizona, as well, and many other places that have allegedly had these downed craft. But I think in the end, it comes down to the golden ticket, which is Roswell. If Roswell gets released, well, then we're going to see some doors open. Yet there is still a lot of controversy about that, because there are some alleged insiders saying that Roswell was just a weather balloon, just like the Army Air Force back then had reported. You know, even though they reported a UFO right off the bat, they all of a sudden started saying that a day later that they got the story wrong and it was a weather balloon. But you know what, Walter? Here's something that I've learned from insiders. You do not send a platoon of Army soldiers to cordon off an area for a balloon. And the other thing that you don't do...
yes, Yes.
The other thing that you don't do is bring in a semi-truck with a tri-axle trailer, flatbed truck, in order to pick up a weather balloon. Those weather balloons could have been picked up by a Jeep, an armored personnel carrier, something much smaller than a semi-truck with a tri-axle trailer. A tri-axle trailer is made to carry heavy weights. I don't see a balloon being a heavy weight, Walter.
Dave Scott hosts Spaced Out Radio, Canadian radio show, that covers UFOs, conspiracy theories, the things that you and I actually care about. He's been a broadcaster for many years. He's also a journalist. He doesn't just throw out wacky ideas. He investigates them. He experiences them the way he experienced Bigfoot. He actually goes into the woods, sleeps, puts out traps for them, sees how it goes. When do your buddies say that Trump is going to talk about it, if ever? What are the odds he's actually going to talk about UFOs?
I think that he doesn't do anything until there's some sort of stability coming back to Iran. I mean, Iran just seems to be trying to put up a fight here, and I don't know why. You know, I mean, I understand why, but in the end, I don't think anything happens with Donald Trump and the UFO files until there is some sort of stability coming in from that conflict right now. I'm not calling it a war. I'm calling it a conflict right now. So once we get into that type of scenario, then I think he can relax a little bit and then maybe get into more of the UFO files. But there are politicians who are pushing for it right now. Tim Burleson is pushing for it. Tim Burchett is pushing for it. Anna Paulina Luna, Nancy Mace, just to name a few, even Lauren Boebert. And you know, I believe both Luna and Boebert are also veterans as well. So there are a number of people who are pushing for it. Now, Representative Burleson has recently come out with a couple of different factors. And number one is that he says that he has got permission to travel somewhere in the United States to see one of these non-human made craft. Now, whether or not he is going to release that information is another story. Now, these are people who continuously talk about transparency. Okay, we need to be transparent about what's going on in the UFO world. And yet, I see these guys saying, well, like Burleson, who is going to go allegedly have this interaction by seeing a craft. Now, my question is, what is he allowed to see? What is he allowed to talk about? Because they all talk about the T word, transparency, but we never seem to get that transparency, Walter. That kind of picks my hide a little bit, and it should pick every American taxpayer's hide too, because if they are holding on to non-human aircraft, not made on this planet, maybe a different dimension, maybe outer space, wherever it may be, we should be able to know about that. We should be able to know where it's hiding. How many do they have? You know, were their bodies involved with this? I mean, there's a lot of questions. You just don't spew something like that. Oh, by the way, I'm going to go see a UFO craft that we have, but I'm not going to be able to tell you about it. Then why even mention it? So we're monitoring that story quite quickly. But sticking with Burleson, he actually had a little bit of a scary incident. This case was coming out on X this past couple of days, where he apparently is starting to receive death threats from inside, not sure where inside, but from the inside, about going after the UFO subject. Apparently, his push for presentation of this subject is not sitting well with a number of people, including some of the alphabet agencies, and they have allegedly threatened him to not dig any further. Whether this is true or not, we don't know, because whoever did it is not going to say a thing. We can only take Representative Burleson on his word, and we're going to be interested to see what happens there.
Now, Burleson, what does Burleson represent? Do you know?
Where does he represent, or what
yes.
does he represent?
No, I'm sorry. Where? Which region of the country, which state does he represent?
I apologize. I'm going to play the Canadian card on this one.
Yeah. So you don't know either. Shame on me.
I don't know. I apologize.
All right. Let's talk to Dave Scott at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. I believe that I'm coming to the conclusion that this has dragged on so long since Roswell that there are no UFOs, no unidentified flying objects involved until the UAP off the coast of California with that TikTok thing. And the reason that makes me go, wait, is because official U.S. Air Force types have said that is not a human, that is not an American aircraft, that is not a human pilot. Nothing we own moves like that. Nothing we own can be piloted like that. That's coming from someplace else. We're not sure where. Now, the only possibility there, the only possibility is that another government had an aircraft that can do that, has a pilot that could move that way, and they're keeping it a secret. They may have other technology we don't know about, and they don't want us to know about. But after, when did Roswell happen, 1948?
1947.
All right, 1947. And since 1947, every year, month after month, there are UAP reports, UFO reports from around the country, many of them from credible people, policemen, airplane pilots, official types. And they're saying, yeah, I saw this, and it doesn't make any sense. And then our astronauts went to the moon and were shook by what they saw. I had Robert Clotworthy from the History Channel on last night, and I said to him, what was the deal with that press conference after those three guys came back from the moon, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin? What was the deal? Why were they so traumatized? Why did they look so spooked? And he said, well, the Air Force, NASA kept saying it was because they were tired. And he said they weren't tired. He said, I've talked to all of them, and it's all about what they saw. And whatever they saw scared them to death. And then one of them, whoever was the one who was flying the command module, he was spooked because it was flying around the moon with him. And nobody ever mentioned that. It followed him around the moon, orbit after orbit. And, I guess that would kind of shake them up.
I have actually heard that story, Walter, from a former NASA employee.
Tell me more.
Now, Now, what my friend stated to me, and I do call him a friend, and I'll be seeing him, he now spends his retirement days looking for Bigfoot down in the South. And he actually worked at the shuttle programs. He lost friends on Challenger. He lost friends on Columbia. He said, Dave, I could get through one of these disasters. He goes, but when the second one hit, I just couldn't do it anymore. I could not do it anymore. And you know what? I believe him on this. But he said that when Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong were on the moon, they looked over towards the horizon or one side of the moon, and there was something like a blue box that was there. And then the next minute when they looked, it was gone. Well, the moon doesn't rotate like Earth does. It doesn't spin. It's in a dead hold pattern. And they also saw, you know, they believe that, you know, this is where Neil Armstrong's alleged closed circuit emergency channel voice came on and said, they are here, they are on the hill, and they are watching us. So if that happened, if that is true, and I'm sure there's been some exaggeration over the years as the story gets bigger and bigger and older, but just going by what I've been told, you know, they did see something. And in fact, every Apollo mission had something happen. By the way, did I ever tell you about the conspiracy theory? Because Apollo went up to 17.
All right, hold on. I want to hear about the conspiracy theory. And I also want to hear from you as to whether or not you think the moon rocket that's about to go up is actually going to go up. That's in just seconds with Dave Scott, host of Spaced Out Radio, spacedoutradio.com, 21 minutes past the hour. This is the Red Apple Audio Network.
It's Another Side of Midnight. It's Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormick.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's T.J. McCormick.
The hidden layer of our existence revealed. Walter Sterling from the Red Apple Audio Network.
All right, Dave Scott, a known Canadian, an expert on UFOs, conspiracy theories, the things you and I are actually interested in, host of Spaced Out Radio. He has a great website, spacedoutradio.com, and an astonishing piece of merchandise, which has my picture on it. It's astonishing, Dave, because I don't have a piece of that, but I wish you all the best with that. No, it's a great illustration of me in a UFO. Don't even want to imagine how that happened. Now, Dave Scott, one of the prevailing theories about why we haven't gone back to the moon in 50 years is we were told not to come back. Have you heard that?
I've heard that numerous times, and I think it makes sense. Look, I mean, go ahead.
Who would have told us that? If they were on the moon, did they know English? How do we know that that possibly could have happened?
Well, I mean, this is where we get into a lot of woo here. So let me just put my tinfoil hat on and my tinfoil underwear and, you know, my tinfoil tank top. I'm looking real sexy right now, you can imagine.
I bet.
Yes. So allegedly there was a message sent down that was intercepted and somehow it was translated into English that said, you're no longer welcome on the moon. There's this thing out there called the Galactic Federation. Okay. And apparently this is, if you remember Star Wars, where they kind of had their own Galactic Federation, they were all worried about what Darth Vader and everybody was going to be doing and taking over the universe to bring it over to the dark side. That's kind of what it's like. Now, do I believe in it? No. No, I say that with a question mark because I'm not sure. I really don't know. But allegedly, there is this Galactic Federation, and they got together and they all said, look, we don't think you humans are ready for any type of deep space travel or setting up on the moon or Mars or anything like that, because you guys are just way too violent. You guys don't respect your planet. You don't respect your water, the resources that you have. You don't even respect each other. You want to kill each other all the time. So even though we are the universe's greatest reality television show, I don't think the aliens are ready for us to be there.
800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. You and I are talking to Dave Scott, a known Canadian, expert on UFOs, conspiracy theories. Do you believe that the rocket that's about to go to the moon, that's being loaded, fueled, getting ready to go to the moon, do you believe that's actually going to happen? Because this has been presented to us many, many times, and then something stops it at the last minute. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I want to see it happen. You know, I love what Elon Musk is doing. Never mind whether you like his politics or not. What he is doing to reinvigorate space travel is amazing. And if you look at every company he has invested in, it is really for the future of humanity. Okay, like knowing that since there's no atmosphere on Mars, we're going to have to put bases underground. So what does he do? He creates a boring company that digs tunnels underground. He's building robots. Why? Because you can send robots up there to build things rather than send humans, which are, you know, are going to, there's not going to be any hospitals. There's not going to be anything that's ready for human interaction there yet. So why not send robots? He's got his own robots being built. You know, with Neuralink, you know, if we could get that going, he's going to be able to transport signals and everything to humans who are preparing for Mars or life on the moon, and they're going to be able to work a lot easier if that is the plan. You know, never mind SpaceX, which is still, if we believe the technology that the United States government is, and places like Lockheed Skunk Works are hiding today, the rockets are really obsolete. It's like a Boeing 737. You and I were talking the other night about how 50 years ago, it still took 6 hours to fly from Vancouver, where I am, to New York. And guess what? In 2026, it still takes 6 hours to fly from Vancouver to New York. You think we'd have some a little bit more technological advancement in air travel by then. But there are people out there who also believe, Walter, that the moon is a waste of time. And the reason why is they believe there's already bases up there that are joint ventures by many countries in the world. So Americans working with Chinese and Japanese and Russians and British and Canadians all over the place. And they believe that's already happening up on the moon. So traveling to the moon, for many people who have done the research into this, and I'm no expert on that part, but friends of mine like Olaf Phillips, who is a secret space program researcher, he believes that we've been on the moon for decades. And that's the reason why we don't go back, because we don't have to go back.
Because we're there.
We're there.
I believe that China, Russia, and America have had a long-term detente, because we are the three nuclear nations. And we got together and said, okay, we could destroy the Earth. We're not going to do that. We're going to initiate a number of projects that we can work on together, one of them being we're going to be on the moon and we're going to be on Mars. Do you believe we've already settled Mars?
Some people believe that. Some people believe.
Do you?
No. I used to.
What changed your mind? You used to believe that we'd already settled Mars, that we already had crews there, we already had bases there. Why did you stop believing that?
I stopped believing in the Mars aspect of everything because I just don't see us having the technology for time travel and jump rooms and everything along those lines that could get us there. That's why. I don't think we have generated enough technology yet in order to try and get that deep into space. The moon, we can get to. I believe there's craft that fly up there. I mean, there's these giant black triangles that, excuse me, there's these giant black triangles called TR3Bs that are out there that people have seen. I've seen two of them, where some of them are, they say are the size of a football field. And I remember asking one insider who says, look, Dave, you can't tell me anything too, or I can't say anything too deep. And he goes, I can work on hypotheticals. So if you ask me a hypothetical question, I could answer it hypothetically. That way I'm not giving you the answer, breaking my NDAs. I said, okay. I said, so let's say these black triangles are real. Hypothetically speaking, where would they land? And he says to me, hypothetically speaking, who says they have to land? Look, we have aircraft carriers, okay? Like if you look at the Gerald Ford or any of the Ronald Reagan aircraft carrier, they don't have to refuel for 20 to 30 years. Then it takes them 2.5 years because they're powered by nuclear power plants. Takes them 2.5 years to refill and refurbish and everything like that. Okay, so they don't need to do that. But think about it: 25 years on average to refill an aircraft carrier can stay at sea, as long as it has food, you can do it. Okay, so why don't we have a craft that maybe doesn't have to land? And maybe it could pause in the sky where a docking station can pull up with it, maybe change the crews or add more people. And maybe it also has the power to travel up to the moon, to drop people off and bring them back as they come. Now, this also opens up another conspiracy theory, Walter, where many people believe, including a famed UFO researcher named Grant Cameron, who's a Canadian, out of Winnipeg, now living in Vancouver, who believes that there are these jump rooms, you know, and I'm going to use a movie example here. If you remember Austin Powers, okay, where they would jump into these time machines, they called them, okay, but in our world, they call them jump rooms where you could jump to anywhere that you want. In fact, there was a gentleman a number of years ago, his name's Andrew Bishago, he's a lawyer out of Vancouver, Washington, who said that his dad introduced him to these jump rooms, and he was actually what they call a chrononaut, not an astronaut, a chrononaut, who would travel back in time or forward in time to deliver notes and messages to people. And he believes that these jump rooms are stationed all over the United States. So let's say there's a jump room in New Mexico. And if you need to go to New Jersey, you walk through and you go to your meeting through this jump room. I mean, it sounds far-fetched. It's hard to fathom, but I think there might be evidence of that out there. Not much, but I actually had somebody a number of years ago send me photographs saying that one of their sources gave them, and of course it's second, third-hand information, that gave them information that certain buildings had jump rooms in them.
800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Talking to Dave Scott, host of Spaced Out Radio. I'm always conflicted because I want to believe in things like jump rooms. I want to believe in time travel. But then I always think, if that was true, that would be the biggest news there is. There's no way that could be kept a secret. If I could go to an old semi-gothic building in the old part of any given city, and son of a gun, there in the basement was a jump room that had been built there in the 1840s when there were still unpaved roads and no railroads to those cities, but somehow or another those cities got built, those buildings got built, but there was this jump room in it where I could go to, you know, Boston or Paris just by standing in it. That would be huge news. That would be unbelievable news. What would be the benefit for anybody to keep it a secret? And, oh, by the way, if it was a secret, how much would it cost for me to get a jump to Paris? Would it be less than a first-class flight?
Well, you know, that's a big thing. I mean, Lord knows I'm never flying to Paris, number one, because I don't like oceans.
French.
And I don't like the French. Well, I think there's a difference between the French and the Quebecois. So, you know, the French are okay. I mean, but let's face it, you know, they've never won a war in their lifetime. So, you know, what do you do with that? You know,
but 800-848-9222. Yes. Or as Caroline Levitt likes to say, yes, well, the French should just be thanking us that they're not speaking German right now. Andy, welcome to the, let me get this right. Welcome to Another Side of Midnight with Walter Sterling and Dave Scott. Hi, Andy. Hello, Andy. Hello, Andy.
Hello. Hello. I'm here.
Yes, sir.
I'm here.
Go.
Okay. Okay, guys. First of all, they did the French.
Andy, get off the speaker. Yeah. Don't talk to me on a speakerphone. Don't tell me how old you are. Get off the speakerphone.
I'm not on the speakerphone. It should be coming in clear right now.
What is it?
Well, first of all, the French helped us in the
reverb on WABC. You have reverb on? What is that? What is that? Well, go ahead. Go ahead.
Cottage industry, UFOs, space aliens. There is no galaxy out there that has the kind of speed that they could produce to send aircraft or spaceships or whatever you want to call them, flying saucers, into the Earth's atmosphere. We know that. This is all, you make money off it. People talk about it, it's interesting and stuff. People are interested in science fiction. And I'm just thinking the next big topic with the government is going to be Bigfoot in about 2 months. It's just a cottage industry, like JFK, everything. Even now, the Epstein files is big right now, and it's current. So it's something that you know, people will look into, and they're interested in it. But I don't think there's anybody here that's ever talked to a space alien, been held by a space alien, or anything along those lines. But it makes for interesting topics. You guys are tremendous. You know, you make it really interesting and stuff. I picture people driving home on the highways tonight listening to this, and they're just spellbound.
Andy, I really appreciate your endorsement of my hard work. And I thank you for that. Thank you for the call, Andy, at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222 with Dave Scott. Dave, do you think that rocket's going to go up? I'm going to ask you again because I have a prediction. My prediction is that rocket's not going to go up. And it has nothing to do with its technical capabilities, with our ability to reach the moon. We've already proven that we can reach the moon. I believe the geopolitical issues of us going back to the moon are more than any of us want to deal with at this time. That's what I think, Dave Scott. How do we find you online, sir? How do we find you online? How do we find you on social media, Dave?
Well, we're on every major podcast network. You can download our show for free. Easiest place to view it is Spaced Out Radio on YouTube and on X at Spaced Out Radio, Instagram at Spaced Out Radio Show, Facebook, Spaced Out Radio. You can join our group or page, and we're all over the place. We're easy to find.
Well, I thought you were just going to say that you're easy, but I thank you, Dave Scott. Thank you for being on Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Network. There's Rob in White Plains at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Hello, Rob. Welcome to the big show.
Hi, Walter. Yeah, hi. Listen, I have an idea. We should get together, the people of the United States, and have an ambassador and try to communicate with these people. There must be a way to communicate with these flying saucers, and we should not, you know, mostly they talk to hillbillies, you know, when they land. We should have Dr. Irwin Corey talk to them, Lou Mangione.
Oh, wait. Hey, Rob, don't forget they could also talk to Carrot Top. Thank you very much for the
Carrot
call.
Top?
At 800-848-9222. Walter M. Sterling, Another Side of Midnight on the Red Apple Audio Network.
It's Another Side of Midnight. Another Side of Midnight.
Political humorist T.J. McCormick.
Now, to the Bernard McGurk Studios, here's T.J. McCormick.
Walter Sterling makes-
makes your evening strange. Red Apple Audio Network.
The hidden layer of our existence revealed. Walter Sterling from the Red Apple Audio Network.
I was just asked, what is a squatty potty? And I imagine it's easy to forget because a few years ago it was all the rage. You heard this news story. The original co-founder and creator of the squatty potty was in federal court on March 2nd facing a child pornography charge following an international FBI investigation. They did an international FBI investigation on the inventor of the squatty potty. Robert Edwards, 50, who was indicted by a federal grand jury last month, appeared for what was initially scheduled as a detention review hearing. As previously reported by whoever this is, Edwards is facing one federal count of receipt of child pornography and has remained in federal custody in Washington County since his arrest February 12th, according to many official people. Squatty potty. You know what the squatty potty was? First, I have to point out that a major investor in squatty potty is Lori Grenier, the woman you have a crush on Shark Tank. Lori Grenier was a major investor in squatty potty, and it was advertised heavily on the radio, like really heavily on the radio. And what it was, all it was a way to, you put this plastic device around the base of your toilet, and instead of your feet hitting the floor, they were boosted about 9 inches into the air. Both of your feet were boosted about 9 inches into the air, and allegedly this made it easier to go to the bathroom. I don't even want to imagine the correlation between the inventor and child pornography. Let's not even think about that. Wow. Okay. Walter Sterling, good evening. I've got a phone number for you, 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Barbara on Staten Island, welcome to the other side of midnight. No, another side of midnight. It's so troublesome to me. Even my current wife thinks it's a great name. That's a great name for the show. I know, I know. Another side of midnight with Walter Sterling on the Red Apple Audio Network. Barbara on Staten Island, what do you have to report?
Am I talking to you now?
You're on the air.
Oh, yes. This is
but
in
relation- wait. I know what the problem is. The problem has been here since 1957. Don't listen to the radio when you talk to me because it's on an endless delay in case you say something bad. Don't turn off the radio. Just talk to me on the phone.
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
It's just in relation to the spaceships and whatever from outer space.
Yes,
we didn't see any. We didn't see any aliens or anything like that. But I have four things to tell you. Very important. I'm 73 years old now. When I went to Catholic school, when I was young, and St. Mary's Mother of Jesus, we were by the ocean there on the Brooklyn side, looking up to Staten Island. And we've seen, this was before, the Verrazano Bridge was halfway built at that time. And we've seen the mothership 4 blocks long going so slow. It was about 4 blocks long that we could see it from Brooklyn, from Bay Parkway to Staten Island. And then this was 6 children, and the car stopped. It was about 5 o'clock. And they didn't have cell phones in those days, but they had cameras coming out of the car taking pictures. And the next day in the newspaper, it said it was a kite with flashlights, 4 blocks long. No. Now, later, this was three. Now I'm 73. About 4
Barbara.
Years ago.
Hey, Barbara. I want to hear the other three incidents because I find you fascinating, but I must share that if you mention your name, if you mention your age again, or if any caller mentions their age, it has nothing to do with your story. So don't mention your age. If anybody mentions their age, I will ask them, when was the last time you had sex?
Okay.
All right.
All right. But that was when I was younger. Now it's all right, whatever. This was about two and a half to three years ago. I was with my friend on Staten Island. I can mention his name, right? David. And we were walking, and we wondered what everybody, the Mexican people and the white people, everybody, with their cell phones, taking pictures, looking up in the sky. We seen coming from the west on Staten Island, going to the east, and then very slowly, about eight of them, flying saucers now, and not a mothership, flying saucers, and veering off to the north. And everybody was taking the pictures. I had my phone and I couldn't take the pictures. Because I'd seen in the past, you know, whatever. I know it exists. I'm not afraid, you know, and that's what happened. And then now I'm with a friend again. We're both on Staten Island. We look toward the bridge over here to the right. I forget what they call it. I think it's the Gothel's Bridge or something, Bayonne Bridge. And we seen one flying saucer. This was last year, up in the air, going down into the ocean. So there you go, two people. We're not crazy, but we're happy. There they are. Look, God created us and everything in the universe. They are our brothers and sisters. We have nothing to be scared of. Nothing.
Sounds like a promo. Now listen, Barbara. More importantly, you're on Staten Island. Where do you get pizza?
On pizza, we go to Highland Boulevard. I love the pizza.
And what do you like on the pizza? Then I'll know whether or not you're truly from Staten Island.
Yes, I like it just with the cheese and the pizza the way it is, the way they make it.
Can you believe there's the criminal activity of these idiots who want pineapple on the pizza? Can you believe that?
No, not at all. They're not Italian.
No, I mean, it's not Italian, but it's not even, it's certainly not New York, but I say it's not American. The fact that anybody would deface a pizza by putting pineapple on it, to me, is a criminal act, Barbara. How do you feel about that?
I feel the same way.
Now that Catholic school that kicked you out, is that still there?
I say something about you. I love your voice. I love the way you talk, and you're a perfect gentleman. That's the way men should be.
I'll tell my wife. Hey, Barbara, thanks for calling. Thank you for listening to the Red Apple Audio Network with Walter M. Sterling at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Whenever I talk to somebody who says they went to a Catholic school, I suffered through catechism. But I always felt bad for the kids who went to Catholic school. I went to a public school, but I always felt bad for kids who went to Catholic schools because they had those insane book bags. They must have carried 10 books in those book bags, and they had homework in third grade and fifth grade. We didn't have any homework. I was blessed. I went to a public school, and the elementary school had a principal that was really an interesting guy, Mr. Albert Koff. He had been a fighter pilot in the war. He'd been a fighter pilot in Vietnam. And this man, he wore a suit and tie, and that shirt didn't move. Nothing moved on him. Like, everything was in place. Everything was military perfect. But, and I don't know where he got this idea, because it was way out of character for the time, he did not believe in homework. He said, "I believe in unstructured play. They're here 6 hours. That's enough. I'm not going to let any teacher give them homework." And they didn't. One of the great things that I got from Mr. Koff is ever since then, whenever my kids were in elementary school, I'd go to those teachers and I'd go to those principals and say, "I do not want my kids to have homework. If you can't teach them fourth grade math in 6 hours a day, you're not a good teacher." One of the big changes and one of the better changes that has taken place is too often, too many people were raised with parents who said, if the teacher says it, it's right. If that's what the teacher expects of you, that's what I expect of you. And it was hard line. Many families had a hard line with the teachers. Teacher says that has to be done, then that has to be done. This was a bad plan, because no matter who you are, no matter what you do for a living, there can always be a challenge. There can always be, here's a better way to do it. Here's a better way to think about it. And just now, in the past few years, just in the past few years, are parents sitting back and going, wait a minute. Wait a minute. No, I don't want my kid to sit in class for 4 hours for the once a day they're allowed to go to the bathroom. Now, you see, what has happened is many things have been installed in public schools and private schools that if you knew about, you wouldn't tolerate. But with the atmosphere that the teacher's right and kids learn, don't bring your problems home, teacher's right, there are things that happen in school that you need to know about that kids have been taught, don't bring it home. I'm going to side with the teacher. Teachers aren't always right. There have been three things that have happened in the past few years that are not right. Many schools have instituted rules about when you can go to the bathroom. Now, when you were in school, right when they put in central heating, when you were in school, you went to the bathroom when you raised your hand and said, I have to go to the bathroom. And you got a hall pass, maybe a hall pass, or maybe not, but you could go to the bathroom when you needed to. When you needed to get a drink of water, you could get a drink of water. That's not true anymore. Did you know that? When you were in school, recess was assumed. The school has a recess period, and we will take recess now, or we will have lunch now, and that's when it happened. But over the years, too many public schools have changed that to make recess a reward rather than an assumed. Recess should be assumed. Some poor kids, 7, 8 years old, they're sitting in a stupid class for 7 or 8 hours a day, and they assumed they could go to recess. But no, you can't go. You didn't behave today. And they're stuck sitting in that room while the other kids are out playing when they need to be playing. The physical activity is a perfectly good thing, and you know it. But they didn't tell you that. The kid was too embarrassed to come home and say, I was punished today. I couldn't do recess. They don't tell you that. Instead, they keep it to themselves because they assume you're going to back the teacher. Bad idea. This is where the culture needs to change relative to our relationship with the schools. But in my opinion, and I'm right, the dumbest thing I have ever heard was that clown governor of New Jersey on his last day in office. The coward, this Wolf guy, Governor Wolf? No, it's Pennsylvania. The last thing he did on his last day in office was ban cell phones in public schools. That was the last thing he did, is he banned cell phones in public schools. And why this hasn't been tested in court, I don't know. Because what it said was that the school would hold that cell phone for that kid until the end of the day. Oh, you know, they don't want the distraction. No. You see, it's not the kid's cell phone. It's your cell phone. You gave your child that cell phone. And that kid isn't 18 yet. That kid doesn't own anything, doesn't have any property. It's yours. You didn't sign a lease. Here, my kid can have this $800 iPhone. Here's the lease. No. There's no transfer of ownership when you're 12. They're technically just carrying it around for mom and dad, or just mom. And that's just wrong. It's your cell phone, and you've decided your child needs to have the cell phone. The child should be able to have the cell phone. And my opinion, which is right, if you're really competing, if you're a teacher and you're really competing with that cell phone for their attention, here's a tip. Why don't you put your curriculum on the cell phone? Get your curriculum. They're watching the cell phone? Fine. Put your curriculum on the cell phone. 800-848-9222. Put your curriculum on the cell phone. They're looking at it anyway. Come up with a way to put it there. There's no reason not to. You learned on Zoom that we can teach on Zoom. Not well. That was a disaster. But I'm sure that from it, learned techniques for teaching on Zoom that could be transferred to today. The sad thing about the COVID nonsense, teaching them on Zoom, was that it was really hard for kids to learn on Zoom. A lot of kids couldn't learn on Zoom at all with all good intentions. But you know what else? No teacher went to teacher college and had a curriculum where they learned how to teach on Zoom. It was a crappy deal all the way around. And it was a terrible time. Just awful. My oldest daughter, who was graduated from high school in 2020, son of a gun. She didn't get a prom. She didn't get any of those senior fun things, any of the wacky things seniors do. She didn't get any of that because she graduated in 2020. And then when she went to college, and maybe this happened with your kid, then when she went to college, they kept her locked up in her dorm room to protect everybody from COVID. Oh, my God. Lionel, I'm going to be a guest starring for Lionel tomorrow night on the Red Apple Audio Network, and that'll be very exciting. Yeah, I'll come up with something to make it exciting. I have an email. It's walter.sterling@wabcradio. walter.sterling@wabcradio. And what did we learn tonight? Well, we learned that we're probably not going to go back to the moon because we were told, don't come back to the moon. We learned that Epstein had a guard that 45 minutes before he died was Googling him. A prison guard was Googling him, and then magically, mysteriously, the same day, transferred $5,000 to her bank account. That's not a bad payday for a prison guard. Magically, $5,000 appeared. You and I will talk more about that. This is the Red Apple Audio Network.
Kelly, donate now to Toys for Tots, which works year-round. Go to toysfortots.org. Toys for Tots supports children in need throughout the year with programs like the Toys for Tots Literacy Program. Established in 2008, it has provided over 63 million books to disadvantaged children. The Toys for Tots Literacy Program is committed to providing disadvantaged children with direct access to books and educational resources that enhance their ability to read and communicate effectively. Go to toysfortots.org.